Congress has a duty to advise and consent. And this duty of Congress to advise and consent has been and will probably continue to be under the limelight with every appointment made by a president following President Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court, a nomination that the Senate simply refused to advise and consent on, leading to him not even getting a hearing. Today on Lessons from the Screen, we're going to be looking at advice and consent and the history of confirmation hearings in the United States, which is, again, creating interest with the fast-moving appointment of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court by Donald Trump.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PACS Inc., a Black activist advocacy and think tank with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black people in America through education, a culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PACSinc.org. Go ahead, leave a comment, donate, become a member, volunteer, take a survey, do whatever you can to help them because they are doing whatever they can to help you. Thank you. And on this episode of Lessons from the Screen, as said earlier, we're going to be getting into the confirmation hearings. Why are they this way? Why aren't we learning anything? What's going on? Why are they such a spectacle? Why is it such a big deal? Why should we care? We're going to be digging into all of that on this show of this episode of Lessons from the Screen. So thank you for tuning in. Get ready. Get your popcorn ready. We're going to try to do something a little bit different this time around as we continue to evolve the show. So as always, let us know what you think, not just about the content, but about the show in general and how it's structured, things that we could do to get better, things that we need to stop doing because it's making us worse. Whatever the case might be, give us some feedback at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Article 2 of the Constitution establishes the executive branch and the federal government. Section 2 of that article establishes the powers of the President of the United States. Clause 2 of that section of that article establishes the Advice and Consent Clause. The Advice and Consent Clause says, and I'm going to read it in its entirety, "He shall have the power, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur. And he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States, whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law. But the Congress may be law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper, in the President alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments." Advice and consent has been debated for years as to what it actually means, with some people saying that the President has the power to make appointments whether or not the Senate confirms them, and others disagreeing. Although generally speaking, appointments not confirmed by Congress are not recognized and pushed forward. This is one of the constitutional checks on executive power that gives the legislative branch the ability to prevent executive overreach and is at the foundation of the modern hearing system of presidential appointments. But there's nothing in there that says that there must be hearings. The Senate can consent without any hearings or contemplation at all. They could even pass a law that conferred sole power to the President to make appointments without need of their advice and consent. So how did we get here? And why don't people have the ability to advise and consent directly? Well, to the second question first. The Constitution is set up to give people power, but to also insulate the government from the whims and passions of the people. And for those of you that can't see me, I got my rabbit ears up when I do that. Passions of the people. Wait, left rabbit ear. Passions of the people. Right rabbit ear. The government needs stability, and people are prone to wild emotional shifts and predictable ignorance, which is the recipe for a chaotic nation that would, in short order, collapse on itself. Now, the people have gotten closer to direct access, as prior to the 17th Amendment, Americans did not vote for senators. Senators were elected by state legislatures. So for the first 125 years of the federal government, Americans did not directly vote for senators. But with the 17th Amendment ratified in 1913, the masses got more power in government, gaining the ability to directly vote for senators who would then be a part of the advice and consent process. Now, there are a few real scares to popular votes, but the biggest scare is probably the demagogue. Now, a demagogue is a political leader who seeks support by appealing to emotions rather than logic, playing on people's prejudice and desires instead of making rational arguments for solving a problem. Donald Trump is a demagogue, and he isn't the first, nor will he be the last, to make his stamp on American politics. But the thought of the rising demagogue usurping the federal government and destroying democracy with the support of the masses worried the creators of the Constitution, which is why we had a system in which mechanisms of power were only influenced by the masses at the lowest levels, with checks going up. Now, to the first question. Second, how did we get here? Originally, uncontroversial appointments didn't get a hearing. They simply got voted on. They got confirmed. When there was a hearing, it was held behind closed doors with witnesses to testify, and the hearings were usually centered around scandals. The first nominee hearing took place in 1873 and forced President Grant to withdraw his nominee over a probe into his use of Department of Justice funds for household expenses. The first public hearing took place in 1916, and Woodrow Wilson, president, Woodrow Wilson's nominee, refused to testify. And after 4 months of deliberation, he was confirmed anyway by a vote of 47-22. In 1922, another nominee was confirmed without testifying. And in 1925, Harlan Fiske Stone became the first nominee to testify before the Judiciary Committee, the committee that is charged with overseeing the administration of justice within the judicial system. The hearing was closed, and he was confirmed by a vote of 71-6. Because hearings were usually tied to scandals, it was considered a courtesy to the nominee to spare them from a hearing. But on August 12, 1937, Roosevelt nominated Hugo Black, a Democratic senator from Alabama, to the Supreme Court. Usually, sitting senators appointed to the court got confirmed immediately with no debate. But this go-around, Black was referred to the Judiciary Committee. During the process, the story broke of his ties to the Ku Klux Klan, of which President Roosevelt said he had no knowledge, and much attention was brought to the appointment and nominations process. Black was a close friend of Walter Francis White, a Black secretary of the NAACP, which would help ease the critics, and Black was confirmed by a vote of 63-16. Black, for his part, admitted to being part of the Klan in the past, but stated that he quit the Klan in 1925, 2 years before his election to the Senate, and that he had not had anything to do with the Klan since. In 1939, with another nomination, the Senate did not want to go through another Hugo Black situation, a situation in which a candidate is put forward, and throughout the process, it becomes national news, some area of controversy in the candidate's past. And the nominee Felix Frankfurter was born outside of the U.S. and had written about the treatment of anarchists in the court system. His hearing was made public so that he could be scrutinized thoroughly to prevent another speedy confirmation like that with Hugo Black, which happened in just a few hours. The Hugo Black confirmation actually took about 6 hours in the General Assembly of debate. Frankfurter was insulted at the idea of being questioned, but he responded and was quickly confirmed. With all this attention on the process, people began to pay attention to the court itself and its power over their own lives, especially following the landmark 1954 Brown versus Board of Education case. In 1959, Harlan was nominated and was facing a country and a Congress supremely interested in the Supreme Court. And he happened to be the grandson of the sole dissenter in Plessy versus Ferguson, making some love his pedigree and others despise it. In 1959, Potter Stewart faced an increasingly hostile opposition in the Senate amongst those that didn't support him and was the first to initiate what would become known as the Ginsburg Rule, which was the decision to not answer questions about cases that might come before him as a justice. In 1967, Thurgood Marshall, the first black justice, was asked hundreds of basic questions that led many to compare it to the literacy test given to blacks before allowing them to vote in the early 1900s. The nomination process had become a spectacle, and the hearing was the headlining event. With the advent of television and the spread of it across the nation, senators began to use the hearings as a way to state their own opinions and beliefs to brighten their own shine or rise their own star, if you will, instead of asking questions to get at the heart of the judicial philosophy and qualifications of the candidate. Prior to national television picking up the hearings, it was rare to get half the committee to show up. Nowadays, there is almost always a 100% turnout. And people have found additional ways outside of constitutional amendments to get involved in the process directly, with special interest groups using political power to pressure presidents into picking certain nominees, and others providing the list of nominees that presidents then choose from. But all of these showcase the ever-evolving political landscape of the American government and American society, and showcases certain cultural and human and societal flaws that we must begin to talk about and contend with. As the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh is virtually guaranteed, I mean, they're sitting in there with the man, basically telling him, you're going to be confirmed, and in some cases directly congratulating him for becoming the next Supreme Court justice, which is just kind of crazy and insulting if you ask me. But anyways, well, it's insulting not to Brett Kavanaugh, but it's insulting to the process. It's insulting to those in opposition. It's insulting to the American people that might be in opposition. It's insulting to, it's insulting to a lot of people. I'm not going to go so far as to say it's offensive, because I don't know that it's offensive, but it is, I view it as an insult. But the spectacle of his hearing is one that is immensely frustrating and immensely uninformative. And because it is immensely uninformative, that makes it even more frustrating. You see, it's frustrating because you can tell that people already have their minds made up. And one of the Republicans made this point while talking to Brett Kavanaugh. Had made this point that people already have their minds made up. And he tried to make the point in a disparaging way about the Democrats having decided that they weren't going to confirm him, which is true. But the same logic equally applies to the Republicans, who have already made their mind up that they are going to confirm him, regardless of what comes to light. And we see this as evidence when they throw softball, stupid questions like, can you explain the Declaration of Independence to me? Are you going to play basketball on the gym above the Supreme Court? Now, and this isn't just to pick on Republicans, because we know that when Democrats have a favorable person sitting in front of them, they use the same softball tactics that we're seeing from Republicans, which is equally as insulting. But if candidates are not going to be forced to answer questions honestly, And for them to even say that it would not be fair or it would not be good for me to give my opinion on court cases that I might see before me. Of course it is. That is the entire reason why you've been appointed, is because people have expectations about what you're going to do if certain cases are put in front of you. So let's not act like that expectation is not a part of the understanding, it's not a part of the process. But when you have candidates that can sit in front of you and basically refuse to answer questions and can basically refuse to go into any level of depth on any level of topic, you have a process that is frustrating for the American people to watch on both sides of the aisle, a process that is disingenuous, a process that we don't care about, and a process that makes us more disenfranchised and more distrustful of the system as a whole. And while the hearings haven't always been in place, they used to have value in providing insight when they happen. And I'll go back to, because in this time of non-answers and talking away a senator's time with 5-minute responses to basic yes or no questions. And to that, I want to expound on that a little bit, because the senators have a limited amount of time to ask questions, and that's why you see them rushing along and interrupting. And when a candidate chooses to spend 5 minutes espousing and talking around and beating around the bush of a topic or a situation or a question that's basically a yes or no question, that is a tactic that is used to relinquish or to pull or to destroy or to whatever you want to say, but it is a tactic that's used to diminish the amount of time that a senator has to bring up what could be a controversial topic, a controversial issue, or an issue that could cause a candidate to lose their nomination. So while they haven't always been in place, they have been used to provide insight when they did happen. And in this time of non-answers and talking away a senator's time with 5-minute responses to basic yes or no questions, combined with senators who would rather build their own brand than get to the heart of the matter at hand, one has to ask, where is all of this going? And is it a good direction for us to be headed in? You let me know what you think. Share your thoughts. I love to hear from you. And that is this episode of Lessons from the Screen. I hope you guys have a good weekend, and I will see you next week.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Once again, I want to thank you for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Google Play Music, or Stitcher. Be sure to head to one of those places and leave us a review, and then be sure to head back to the website to let us know what you think about the show and communicate with us. Also, be sure to head to www.PacSync.org and show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is doing big things in the community and trying to do more, always trying to do more. So be sure to head to the website. That's www.PacSync.org. Donate, volunteer, become a member, talk about it, whatever. They can use your support. And once again, they are doing great things in the community. As always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the Black community. The things that we look at, whether it be on the Trending Tuesday or the regular Lessons from the Screen show, will always be looked at from the Black perspective. So keep that in mind, because we need more minds shaped into that perspective and trying to do things that we need done for ourselves. So with that in mind, again, thank you guys for listening in. Remember to tune in to the Freedom Train Radio. We have the app that's available that you can get from the website. It's in the Google Play Store. Sorry, it's not available on iTunes yet. We have the live internet radio, and we have more shows coming up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I will see you guys for the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.